Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. Welcome to Nature Mystic with Selena Fox, a podcast where we enjoy encore presentations from Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister Selena Fox from her previous podcasts. In tonight's encore from 2020, Selena discussed ways of exploring ancient and contemporary forms of nature religion and nature-centered spirituality practice.
Welcome to Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. This is your host, Selena Fox, and we are exploring eco-spirituality in this podcast. Let's begin with some reflections and connections with nature. We call to the powers of the sacred earth, the soil, rocks, sand, the earth. We call to the sacred earth as physical dimension. Come, be with us, guide us in our explorations tonight. We call to the powers of the sacred air, the wind, the breath, atmosphere. We call to the sacred air as cognition, the realm of thoughts, communication, analysis, intellectual development. We call to the powers of fire as lightning flash, as sacred flame, as energy, bringing light and heat, supporting life. We call to the sacred fire from human experience, our vitality, our will, motivation, stamina. Come and be with us in our explorations. We call to the sacred water, fresh water, salt water, and the mix, the oceans and seas, lakes, ponds, springs, rivers, streams, dew, rain, moisture within our own being. This is Selena Fox, and I am glad to be here tonight in celebrating eco-spirituality. We call to the sacred earth. We call to the sacred air. We call to the sacred fire. We call to the sacred water. We call to the sacred spirit, that interconnecting source and force that connects us not only with earth, air, fire, and water, but connects us with the greater circle of life that is part of planet Earth, that connects us with planet Earth, that connects us with that realm that's beyond the Earth, our solar system, our galaxy, the universe, the greater cosmos. We call to the powers of nature. We call to nature as one. We call to nature as many dimensions. We call to nature as sacred. We call to you, we honor you, and invite you, nature, elements, planet, to be with us tonight as we explore echo spirituality. What is echo spirituality? It's a convergence of religion, philosophy, spiritual worldviews with environmental understandings, explorations, and yes, science. I'm using the term eco-spirituality tonight as a more universal term that covers not only eco-spirituality of the present, but different forms of nature and religion, spirituality, and philosophy from the past. And we also look at eco-spirituality in terms of its trends, its processes that are taking us into, hopefully, a more sustainable future, not only for human life and other life here on planet Earth, but in the larger universe of which we are a part. Let's begin our journey through time with eco-spirituality and going back into what some people call primal nature religion. Sometimes this is known as first religions, indigenous religions, tribal religions, but the term that seems to be most widespread is the concept of animism. The current concept, animism, that has its roots in the earliest stirrings of human life. The idea that there is a divine spirit within all things, and that it's possible to interact, to connect, to communicate, to understand, to learn from this sacred spirit. Some of the understandings about our earliest stirrings of human life and culture have come from ancient sites, caves with rock art, carvings and paintings, megalithic circles of stone going back thousands of years, some with depictions of creatures, of plants, of humans, some carved stones in different shapes, ancient stone circles, sacred mounds, earthworks that in contemporary times we have rediscovered their alignments with the rising and the setting of the sun, the moon, the cycles of sun and seasons. We also connect with the ancient stories of the past that have come down through folk tales, fairy tales, mythology, bardic poetry, and music. This animism that is thought to be foundational to all of human religious development most likely emerged as humankind interacted with plants and creatures, with the elements, with environment, throughout life. We know from some of the sacred art that there are depictions of humans and creatures in relation with each other, and indeed what seem to be some type of hybrid images of humans transforming into creatures, creatures into humans, winged ones, horned ones, that essential interconnection with the realm of creatures dates back to earliest times. And in like fashion, human connections with plants. We know some of what we know about early human life from some archaeological explorations of sacred sites as well as habitat sites. Indeed, as old grave sites have been discovered, pollen of different types of flower plants have been found in grave sites, and red ochre, a color from the very earth itself, has been associated with grave sites and habitat sites. Quartz crystals go back into the ancient times as well, and some carvings out of stone have survived from the ancient past and to the present day. Indeed, one of those images which some researchers have called the Venus of Willendorf, what appears to be a very abundantly shaped female form that was called Venus as kind of a generic term for goddess, and Willendorf, which is the place closest to the cave that this approximately 4-inch high stone carving was found. That image is said to be between 25,000 and 35,000 years old. And today, many people involved in eco-spirituality have used that image as an embodiment of an ancient depiction of the planet itself. Whether or not it was actually used that way thousands of years ago or not, we cannot say for sure. But clearly that is an example of a revival and a repurposing of an ancient image. And in my own work with connecting with the sacred dimensions of planet Earth, that is one of the images in my goddess figurine collection that I associate with Earth Mother. In addition to the ancient past, with the concept being rooted in that there's a divine source, a spirit within things, not only creatures and plants and humans, but within rocks, soil, waters, the wind, the sun and the moon, the sacred fire, and other primal forces on planet Earth. We journey into what some people will call ancient pagan times, ancient Egypt, the Middle East, with cultures of Sumer, Assyria, Babylonia, the Mediterranean area with the civilizations of Old Crete, the Minoans, the Greeks, the Romans, going into Northern Europe, heathens, the ancient Celtic peoples, and in other parts of the world, there were people also embracing nature and evolving religions that can be characterized as nature religions. Often polytheistic, different forms of the divine, different forces of nature, having anthropomorphic identity at times, having stories, sacred tales that have transmitted some philosophy. Even before the gods and goddesses that were known as Olympians amongst the ancient Greek religion, there were forms of pagan religion that preceded that in old Greece. Indeed, Gaia, or Gay, Mother Earth, was a primal force. Mother Earth and Mother Nature converge in Gaia in the ancient Greek world, for she not only brought forth plants and creatures, the waters, the forests here on planet Earth, but she also brought forth the stars, the heavens. The ancient Greeks for a time considered the earth as a kind of disk with a river that encircled it. Now, not all ancient Greeks had that concept, and indeed, more information is coming to light about the diversity in ancient Greek religion. But the idea of Gaia, rooted in the pre-Olympian Greek religion and then continued on as she had her tales and her forces interwoven with the emergence of the Titans and then the Greek gods and goddesses of Olympus, as well as other sacred forms, she continued to be present. And today, she emerges again in contemporary eco-spirituality. So as we look back to the ancient pagan past, the stirrings of animism from our Stone Age ancestors evolved during the Bronze Age and the Iron Age, and indeed, different forms of nature had temples created and altars and priests and priestesses serving these. A religion started emerging in different places and in different ways. Forces of nature very much intertwined within the way that the ancient pagan ways were evolving religion and spirituality and philosophy. And as the world started becoming Christianized, beginning in the Middle East and spreading out across the Mediterranean and then going beyond and being around the world, Christianity brought forth some different ways of doing religion, but yet the idea of connecting with nature continued to play a part, although it was not so central as it was with the old pagan religions. And as different world religions emerged over the last 5,000 years, some existing alongside different pagan religions in different areas of the world. There is a growth in population, a growth in human diversity, and there were still some of the old ways of the pagan past that started emerging in world religions, and part of that had to do with celebrating the seasons. We're doing this podcast during what Christians may call Holy Week, and this year, this week coincides with Passover. In fact, tonight is the first night of Passover amongst people of the Jewish religion. So looking at how does Easter get set every year, it's the first Sunday after the first full moon on or after spring equinox. So yes, there's a solar and a lunar dimension, something that has its roots in the ancient past as well. Let's take a look now at world religions today and eco-spirituality in the present day. Paganism, rooted in the very ancient past and with stronger manifestations as classical religion and old pagan religions took form and existed amongst various people, has reemerged in the mid-20th century and continues to grow and evolve today. Indeed, some people are practicing a nature spirituality that calls itself paganism. The word pagan has a number of different connotations for people. Some people prefer the phrase nature spirituality rather than the word pagan, because at one point in time, back during the transition in old Europe from the old pagan ways to Christianity, the word pagan was actually a pejorative term. Some saw it as not only dweller in the country where some of the old pagan religious folk practices continued, but some actually saw it meaning not up with the current way of being, which was church and state had combined to bring forth Christianity as a dominant religion. I'm comfortable using the pagan word in context where there are opportunities to share what that means for those who may not fully understand the context or even the history of that term. But I also increasingly, over the last several decades, have come to use more universal terms to describe the form of spiritual practice that I personally do and the people I minister to. And so nature spirituality is a term that I've used, and indeed in creating this new podcast for CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, our internet radio network, I've chosen to use that as a more universal term. And for some, they may see nature spirituality and eco-spirituality as identical terms. But I use eco-spirituality as an even broader term that covers a variety of different religions. Eco-spirituality, eco-theology are terms that I've been using in connection with my interreligious work and multicultural work and looking at the greening of religion of many types, the greening of philosophy and worldviews of many types, the greening of spirituality of many types. In the world today, paganism continues to grow and expand, and part of that has its roots in that we now have cyberspace to connect us and our ability to connect with others that share this evolving worldview has been amplified and continues to be so. Other people are having that same impulse of being in better relation with nature rise up within them, and they may not choose to follow a particular pagan path or nature spirituality path, but they really want to draw from their own religious forms, philosophical forms, or spiritual forms something that incorporates an environmental science dimension, an environmental responsible dimension, a social justice that's eco-justice dimension. I have discovered in my more than 50 years of interreligious work a great acceleration in what I call the greening of religion, especially in the last 30 years. I have noticed this as interreligious conferences, interreligious groups, interreligious endeavors, projects, networks have come into being. I actually see this growth of the interreligious movement, the interfaith movement, the multi-religious movement. Here again, there are a variety of terms that have come to describe this. I see this as part of that interconnecting source, force that connects us with the divine, that connects us with the planet, that connects us with all of nature. As that has become more prevalent in human consciousness and people have felt the need to celebrate that interconnectedness, and to converge with others of different cultures, of different languages, of different nations, of different beliefs. I see all of this as a healthy way of humankind growing up as a species. And with the interreligious work that I've been engaged in over the years, I'm glad to report that at the various conferences I've been in, how humans are in relation with the natural world has been a topic of discussion. And in some of these conferences and endeavors, including the Parliament of the World's Religions, it has been front and center as an important way of converging that diversity, finding common ground, and collaborating for a healthier planet. The Parliament of the World's Religions first emerged in 1893 in Chicago. It brought together what some people would call Western religious traditions or Abrahamic religions with religions that are rooted and having their origins in Asia. That was historic, and it was stimulating of much thought and connection. Although the Parliament was a one-time thing back in 1893 and was part of the Columbia Exposition, also known as the World's Fair, that was held in Chicago at that time, it planted seeds, and those seeds sprouted again, and that led to the Centennial Parliament of the World's Religions back in 1993. I was among the delegates at that conference, and Circle Sanctuary was among the sponsoring religious organizations. Indeed, out of the 200 sponsoring religious communities, churches, denominations, traditions, endeavors, there were five pagan organizations that were sponsors. With this great convergence, we had the opportunity to interact with people of different cultures, of different places, and together to learn about the state of the planet as a whole in environmental science terms. The 1993 Parliament was historic in that it too sowed seeds, not only in the interreligious world, but in the environmental science world. And some of those seeds that started sprouting were actually some concepts that people would call eco-spiritual concepts, and some of us pagans would call pagan worldview. The idea that we all are interconnected, the idea that we are part of an interconnected community of life here on planet Earth, what is happening to one does impact that greater web of life, that circle of nature. The idea that as part of spiritual practice, it is important not only to care for other humans, but the greater natural world. Now, I have discovered, as I've been at a variety of environmental science conferences, as well as interreligious events, that the greening of religion takes a variety of forms. So the eco-spirituality dimensions of not only major world religions, but other religions on the planet, has taken stories, prayers, texts, practices, and repurposed them, reinterpreted them. An example of this, coming out of the sector known as Abrahamic religions, is the story in Genesis. And as I grew up and learned Bible and my family of origin, the idea of humankind having dominion over the earth was a basic teaching back in the 1950s. But I was among those who early on thought that that needed to have a different interpretation. And indeed, as I grew as an environmental activist in the 1960s and started coming of age into young adulthood, I was part of a variety of people working for a better environment and saw that interconnection of humankind with the environment, not as humans being in a dominating role of the environment, that the environment is for us to use however we want. Instead, seeing humankind as responsible for caring for the environment and being in good relation with that. Now, there is a philosophy now known as creation care that emerged with this reinterpretation of Genesis. For myself, as I've continued to grow in my connection with environmental science, with nature, communion, with pagan spirituality, for me, I see humans have a responsibility to be in good relation with the rest of the natural world. And I no longer share the idea of us being caretakers, per se, or stewards of the planet, but as participants, as community members with all the various species that are on the planet today, of creatures and plants, with the environment of the elementals, with the water and the land, with the air, indeed, even with energy, and looking for ways that us humans can have cleaner, more sustainable forms of energy. So there are some different takes on how humankind relates to the environment. According to what particular religion is greening, my paganism has emerged not only from my personal experience, but from my studies of classical Greece and Rome, philosophy and religion, learning in not only classics courses in college, but continuing that study as I've continued to be in the world, looking at art and the different civilizations and cultures. So my own paganism has a scientific dimension because I consider scientists as part of my identity, as well as priestess, as well as being a nature mystic. I'll take a few moments to talk about mysticism because nature mysticism is something that's timeless. It goes across cultures, national boundaries, spiritual traditions, languages, and one way of looking at the ancient past is that it had its origins there as well. Indeed, being a mystic of any type, pretty much if you are embracing that term, you have porous boundaries in your way of processing information and experience, that you hold the juxtaposition of opposites, that you have a oneness as well as a multiplicity as you relate with others, and that you value time in which you experience a merger, a oneness with the sublime, with the divine. And nature mysticism is a form of mysticism that involves connecting with the natural realm as part of mystical life. So I'm not only a pagan priestess, but a nature mystic and an environmental scientist. And for me, those three strands weave together in an integrated way. I think that too often humankind has, looking at the thing of religion, have put it in an oppositional way with science. But for me, science is one way of relating to nature. Mystic union with nature is another way of understanding nature and doing nature practices, which is part of nature religion and spirituality, is another way. And the three of them together present a holistic way of being alive and being one with nature. I'd like to share with you now some ways of evolving an eco-spirituality as part of whatever your personal religion, spirituality, and or philosophy is. Some people prefer to talk about their worldview as spiritual instead of religious. Often that comes from having a close encounter of a problematic kind with an oppressive, dogmatic form of religion and being in a form of spirituality that has more flexibility is much more workable for some people. But I also use the term philosophy because not all people who are embracing spirituality or religion are comfortable with those terms. Indeed, I also do ministry to free thinkers. And within free thinkers, that community, there are atheists and agnostics and secular humanists. For myself, eco-spirituality can be embraced by the very religious of a particular religion, by the spiritual and not religious, as well as secular humanists and other free thinkers. And that it is a matter of personal identity and lifestyle and patterns of living. So what are some eco-spirituality practices that I have found useful in my own work and that I have encountered other people also having as part of their nature spirituality and eco-spirituality way of being? First of all, nature communion. Get out into natural spaces. Take nature walks. And as you do, not only do the exercise, but be observant. Be aware of the environment around you. Connect with it. And in addition to doing a meditative nature walk, find a place to be. Center yourself. Experience nature with your senses. What do you notice physically? What can you touch? What do you smell? What do you taste? What do you feel? What do you hear? What do you see? And what do you intuit? That inner sense of knowing. And as you shift into that nature communion experience, experiencing yourself as being part of the scene rather than a visitor to the environment. To shift your thinking, your feeling, your energetics to experience yourself as part of that greater circle of nature of which you indeed are part, and shifting into a place where you feel alive with it, in harmony with it, to move into what I call nature bliss. Now, some people talk about nature communion with some other terms. Indeed, in Japan, in parts of the United States, and other parts of the world, the idea of forest bathing, actually going out into a forest as a therapeutic way of being, is being prescribed for some people. Disengaging from mobile devices and computers and other screens and interior places and going out into the green world and being with it. So nature communion can also be a kind of ecotherapy or nature therapy. Another practice comes out of that nature communion to shift from ego-centric consciousness, really thinking about yourself, your day-to-day cares and all of that, into eco-consciousness. A really powerful way of doing that is going out to a place where you have a good view of the night sky on a clear night, doing a meditation on the sky, experiencing yourself as part of the community of life on planet Earth, and as you gaze to the heavens, recognize the Earth is part of just one solar system within not only the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy that we're part of, but within the greater universe. To really shift your consciousness into a cosmic consciousness by doing a heavens meditation, day-to-day cares can recede into the background, and hopefully you can take a break from them completely as you take in the starlight. Being able to attune to the beauty and the magic of the universe. That, too, is a therapeutic thing that you can do. Along with nature communion and ecocentric consciousness, being aware of the interconnectedness of all life. That concept going back into the earliest human times and extending into the here and now present. Sometimes it's called the sacred hoop among some Native American tribes and nations. In those sacred traditions, sometimes it's called the sacred circle. Sometimes it's called the web of life. But recognizing ourselves as part of that vast interconnectedness and to be able to resonate with that interconnecting source or force. Indeed, James Lovelock, a physicist, wrote a book back in 1979 called The Gaia Hypothesis and talked about the importance of looking at life on planet Earth as an interconnected system. And indeed, pagan philosophers, old and new, have this as central to their worldview. One of the reasons that I prefer to use nature spirituality instead of Earth-centered spirituality as part of my Aung identity is because I not only honor my connection with life here on the planet, but I recognize that nature religion not only has earth religion as part of it, but there's star religion. Indeed, looking into the ancient pagan past, some of the cultures and peoples were more focused on connecting with the cycles of sun or the cycles of moon. Some had particular star constellations, sacred stories about them, and certainly the different tribal peoples have looked at the Pleiades and the constellation Orion. Is all part of their sacred lore and teachings. Another practice that's eco-spiritual, is to call to mind and to celebrate your connection with creatures. If you have a creature that's part of your household, some people call them companions, some people call them pets, to recognize that creature as a part of the living fabric, a part of your support network, and that you are part of the support network of the creature. I live out in a forest, and my creature connections are the creatures that also live in this forest, the wild birds, the squirrels, the possums, the raccoon, the deer, the wild turkeys that frequent the forest near the home, and some other creatures as well. Some find it helpful to learn about different creatures as part of personal practice, and certainly being aware of how we live life, and not only living our life so that we are in harmony with other humans, but with the creatures that are part of the environment and the vegetation. Another part of eco-spirituality is looking at those vegetation connections. Indeed, the green man, the green woman, the green spirit that was depicted back in ancient times and in medieval cathedrals and in other art over the ages is a personification of that green connection. Are there particular trees near where you live that you enjoy looking at, sitting next to? You consider them friends, developing those relationships, acknowledging those relationships, and being caring with those relationships. And taking a look at the food that we take into our lives, being able to do some kind of gardening or supporting people that do natural and holistic farming, permaculture, sustainable agricultural practices. All of this can be seen as a sacred eco-spirituality dimension. Connecting with place, the spirit of place where you live, being in harmony with that, understanding ways to care for the environment, not just where your home is located, but your neighborhood. Are there environmental issues there that need to be improved? Working with others to bring about those improvements. And spending time as part of daily life, acknowledging and being appreciative of your place on the planet. Attunement to the elements of nature, the earth, the rocks, the soil, the air, the winds, the breath, the fire, sources of energy, in addition to sacred flames, the water, fresh water, salt water, different bodies of water, the water within our own body, spirit, that interconnecting source and force, and connecting with the human dimensions with each of these elements, earth, the physical realm, air, the mental, fire, the energetic, water, the emotional, spirit, the sacred dimension that encompasses all of those. Attuning to those elements, having a home altar, having a representation of each of those elements on the altar, and being engaged with environmental conservation with each of those elements. recycling and paying attention to how you interact with the element earth. Air, what do you put in the air? How clean is your air? Working to bring about healthier atmosphere. Fire, sources of energy. Working for sustainable energy being an option. If you have it in your area, working with that. Water, working for clean, abundant water. Cleaning the oceans up from human debris, especially the plastic that's gone into that. Working for healthier waters in our streams and rivers and lakes. Spirit, finding ways to work with others for greater, healthier environment, not just with humans, but that whole community of life of which we're part. Spirit, also connecting with the divine and giving a sacred place and sacred space and sacred time in one's life to resonate with the divine as one, as many, as goddess, as God, as nature spirits, as elementals, as ancestors, as spirit of place. There's different facets depending on your particular path of eco-spirituality. Celebrating nature cycles, observing and celebrating the cycles of the sun, the daily cycle of sun rising and sunset, and the yearly cycle as the days get longer and shorter, celebrating the seasons, and certainly a strong influence of paganism in the whole realm, the interreligious, multicultural, eco-spirituality realm, has been a reemergence of humankind celebrating the beginnings and midpoints of each of the four seasons, the solstices and equinoxes, and what's known as the cross quarters or the Celtic fire festivals between. Celebrating the cycles of the moon, the dark moon, new moon, the full moon, the waxing moon, the waning moon, and celebrating cycles of life, recognizing human life as part of a larger life cycle. The conception, the birth, the infancy, the childhood, the coming of age into adulthood, the mature adult years, the senior adult years, passing into the end of life and rebirth. And another way of being able to evolve in eco-spirituality for self is to develop some personal household, family, and community practices connected with attuning to nature. Eco-spirituality is continuing to grow and evolve. And it is my hope, as we go into the 50th anniversary of Earth Day here on April 22nd, 2020, that we not only celebrate the planet, not only celebrate science and scientific understanding and research and work on behalf of the planet, but we celebrate and connect with the spiritual dimensions of our life here on planet Earth. And as we turn our attentions to that larger universe of which we are all part, and as humankind moves into space, that we be part of eco-spirituality, harmony, and well-being, not only on planet, but off planet, that we be sources of solutions rather than pollutions. Thank you all for listening to Eco Spirituality, This is Selena Fox, and you've been listening to Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. I invite you to celebrate Earth Month this April 2020 with a variety of events online. Circle Sanctuary will be having our first ever Earth Day celebration on Saturday, April 18th. I will be doing an Earth Day ceremony as well as sharing a history of Earth Day. I have podcasts coming up with ideas for celebrating Earth Day and with an Earth Day ritual. So tune in to Nature Mystic. That's on Sundays at 6 p.m. Central Daylight Time, which is 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And join me again next Wednesday night for another session of Nature Spirituality. My husband, Dr. Dennis Carpenter, who is a professor of psychology, and I will be exploring eco-psychology, a field that both he and I have been in for several decades. We'll talk about eco-psychology and how the realm of mental health has been evolving. And then on April 22nd, I not only will be doing Earth Day 50 celebration on a podcast, I also will be doing some live streaming events on my main Facebook page, Selena Fox Updates. I hope to have something on Instagram TV, and I now have a YouTube channel, Selena Fox, as well as am on Twitter, Selena_Fox. And you also can connect with some Earth Day celebrations all this month at the Circle Sanctuary social media sites. Yes, we have a YouTube channel, and there's some great videos of different scenes of Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. We're on Twitter and Instagram, as well as on Facebook, Circle Sanctuary Community. And our main place on the web is circlesanctuary.org. I invite you to go under teachings, and you will find a variety of articles and rituals there that could be a support and a good resource for you during this Earth Month as we lead up to the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. And of course, be sure to check out the other podcasts that are part of CSNP. We have a Facebook page, CSN Podcast. Like and follow us there, and you will find our schedule for all our upcoming podcasts in April 2020 at the CSNP webpage. That's part of circlesanctuary.org. So in closing, we give thanks to the earth, to the air, to the fire, to the water, to the spirit. We give thanks to the sacred circle of nature of which we are all part. We give thanks to planet Earth, our home. We give thanks to the divine as one and many. We give thanks to our connection with the cosmos, our connection with each other, our connection with love. Good evening. And green blessings.
Let your blue green ocean, bless your endless sky, your streams and your valleys, your mountains so high. Bless your gods and goddesses, Buddha, Sikh, and Jay. Jesus, Allah, Yahweh, we praise your many names. speak a thousand languages, we speak with the same tongue. Bless our planet, a new one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth, we are all one family, we are children of the earth. Bless your vibrant cities, bless your sacred ground, your hillsides and your forests, and bless your tiny town. Bless the winged ones that fly, bless the horse and bear, elephants, the dolphin, the cricket and the hare. We speak a thousand languages, we speak with the same tongue. Bless our planet, under one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth, we are all one family, we are children of the earth. Bless our planet, under one sky, all the people on it, we all laugh and we all cry. Oh, bless our planet, place of our birth, we are all one family, we are children of the earth. We are all one family, we are children of the earth.
For joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.